Well, good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. It is the 16th of November, 13 minutes past 9 o'clock. Great pleasure to be with you. I hope you all had a beautiful weekend and a safe one at that, especially safe. And we're glad you're with us. We have a lot to talk about today. We have a wonderful panel to do so. And we'll get going. Just a reminder, you can join in and write to us, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Tell you a little secret, we get way more letters than we ever have time to get to. So we curate them, and we look for, you know, like-minded letters. A lot of people say essentially the same thing, so we try to pick out one out of that lot that speaks to the group. And so if you don't hear your letter, please don't think we dislike you. Please don't think that we are punishing you in some way. Please don't think that your life is about to end, because really, it doesn't matter. I know people take it very, very seriously, but please just don't worry about it. We'll get someday. We'll get to it. I promise you. Anyway, we have the letters, and we'll get to them, and we get to almost all of them that we select in a day. And sometimes we just don't have, if people are saying the same thing, we kind of skip over those. So, but all I'm asking you is don't take it personally. Many of you are taking it personally. Don't take it personally. Okay, with that out of the way, can you tell what the issue was this weekend? We go to, just a reminder, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Let me introduce the panel to you so we can get started. And Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Good morning, Joe. I'm here. I'm ready to rock and roll.
Excellent. Good to hear that skip in the step. Let's go to Teresa Bourgeois, Cohoes City Director of Operations, a communications consultant, long been with ties to the federal government and has done every job imaginable. Sure, her resume is really something, and it's a great pleasure to have Teresa with us this morning. Hello, Teresa. How are you? I will press the button so we can actually hear you. Hello, Teresa. How are you?
Hello, Joe. How are you?
I'm well. Good to hear your voice. Thank you for being with us. We appreciate it very much.
Delighted to be here on International Day of Tolerance. So we all need a little more of that.
Yeah, you put the pressure on now. Okay. Well, we'll tolerate everything, I promise. Speaking of who's the patron saint of tolerance, Malcolm Nance is on the show. He is the counterterrorism expert and, of course, a best-selling author and our dear friend. Malcolm, good morning, and how are you?
Bless you, my son. I'm so glad to be here to spread cheer and tolerance and goodwill.
It's what we look for you to do. Yes.
That's not happening.
Okay. Libby Post is our little ray of sunshine, too. Libby is a political consultant and also a dear friend. Good morning, Libby. How are you?
Oh, I'm just ducky.
Excellent.
I'm really
excellent.
Looking forward. And instead of tolerance, I want us to embrace. Just saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Embrace.
Embrace.
You know, I know this may be getting us off onto a tangent, and I apologize, but I was really struck. I've heard so many people try to answer this question. I was really struck, for those of you who saw it, that President Obama was on 60 Minutes last mm-hmm. night, and he has a new book out, of course, and was talking about that issue. And I thought his thoughts on it were really fascinating, and really one of the points being that people blame the media, but he was blaming niche media and people who only hear what they want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
And this idea of embracing thoughts that are not your own, that help us to understand that there are other viewpoints, I thought was very effective. It's not a novel thought, but I thought his articulation of it was quite beautiful, for whatever it's worth.
We have a society right now that's only looking for confirmation bias. That's all they're looking for. They want to an outlet that confirms what they think instead of challenging what they think.
Well, we will we'll keep that
unlike WAMC. Just putting it out there.
All right, so let's start this morning, and it comes to vaccine distribution. So the incoming Biden team is trying to work on the transition. Now, you'll remember the president has yet to concede. Yesterday, he said he won, and everybody was like, oh, look, he's actually saying that he's acknowledging the fact that Joe Biden won. And then he pulled that back and said, no, he didn't win, and he's not conceding, and blah, 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 blah. So that all happened within a 90-minute span of time yesterday morning. Ron Klain, who is soon to be the president, the new president, President-elect Joe Biden's chief of staff, President Biden's chief of staff, went on the Sunday shows this morning and said, look, urging the Trump administration to reverse course and begin working on a presidential transition so nothing drops in this change of power that would jeopardize the new administration's ability to distribute a coronavirus vaccine. Here's what we know about the vaccine. We had good news last week from Pfizer. We got good news this morning from Moderna. There was a kerfuffle over the weekend when the president spoke on Friday, the first time we had seen him in over a week, saying that, we have it. New York's not going to get it, but everybody else will. And so, and then this coming from Ron Klain, who is the incoming chief of staff, saying, okay, look, we really do need to put these petty grievances aside because we have to start taking care of people. And if we're going to do that immediately on the ground running on January 20th, then we got to get going. So I'm interested in your thoughts on this, Alan. I also then want to go to Teresa because I know she has some thoughts on Ron Klain, who she has worked with, and I'm curious on that as well.
Well, it's nothing short of horrendous. We have a president of the United States who claims that he's still the president, is going to be, and that he's going to be the president in the next term. He has supporters who believe that garbage. But we know that Joe Biden won the election. It's that simple. Joe Biden won the election, and he won it by tens of thousands of votes where he needed to do that. This is just a place that I have no idea how the United States ever elected anybody like this, who is so dysfunctional, so obsessive, that he has convinced himself that he's going to be the president. We have seen people like that. The mental institutions are filled with them. But he has a lot of power, and he's sticking to it. I recently had a discussion with a guy who said, but the electors haven't been counted yet. No, but the electors have been elected. Don't you get that? So it is. It's terrible. And the worst part of it is that thousands of people are going to die because Trump won't share information with an incoming administration.
You know, Alan, to the point you just made about the conversation you just had, I think that's interesting because when you say, well, yeah, the electors have, but this is the way we do it. That's the way the system goes. In any election prior to this, it's been the same case.
Exactly.
You haven't said, oh, well, the media is the one who is naming the president. It's not the media who should be naming the president. It's the Electoral College. Yeah, we know that. We know that. But as you indicated, this is the process we're going through. This is the process we've always gone through. And there's nothing different from that. And that's scary in and of itself.
Can you imagine if Trump had won? Whether he'd be saying it is garbage? No.
Well, and especially given that he was on the campaign trail for so long saying that the day after I win, you're never going to hear me say COVID again. Well, guess what? Mm-hmm. You know, we're at the height of the pandemic, and it's
they wrote him
been
a piece.
Worse.
Yeah.
Okay. Teresa, let's go to you. Give us a sense of your relationship with your working relationship with Ron Klain. And here is a guy who has worked on Ebola with President Obama. He is a long time friend and aide to Joe Biden. And what do you think of the job he will be able to do, even if he doesn't get the information that they need that seems so desperately needed?
So I've had the privilege of working with Ron Klain in the 90s when I was working in the Senate with Senator Kennedy on the Labor and Human Resources Committee, and he was also working in the Senate. And I found him to be one of the most brilliant and strategic people I've ever had the chance to be around. He really, you know, looked three or four layers ahead. You know, people say he played chess or checkers. He definitely was a chess player. He was very focused on building coalitions across the aisle as well as among the Democrats. And he, you know, he's just an incredible strategic thinker who understood messaging as part of integral part of building a policy position. And you saw it yesterday when he said something that was so simple, but I hadn't heard it be said before. You know, it's vaccines are not going to save people. It's vaccinations that are going to save people. And there's a big difference. But, you know, it's important to develop the vaccine, but you have to be able to deliver it throughout the United States and around the world. But he comes to this job with incredible background. He's worked in all three branches of government. He clerked for Supreme Court Justice Byron White. He was in the Senate working for Biden in the Judiciary Committee, where I met him. Also, he was staff director for the Senate Democratic Leadership when I worked for him when he was staff director for the Senate Democratic Leadership, and I was running the message operation. He was in the White House, VP for Vice President Gore, for Vice President Biden. He's worked on judicial nominations. I mean, he just has an incredible breadth of experience, and he's just really, really good at what he does. And as you say, he brings to this job this experience with the Ebola. But the thing that I think is fascinating, back in 2016, in the spring of 2016, he wrote a piece called Confronting the Pandemic Threat, where he said, you know, most people are focused on terrorist threats and weather disasters and climate change, but biggest threat is pandemic illness. I don't know if you folks have talked about this already on the show, but where he said really infectious disease and an airborne infectious disease was one of our greatest threats, and outlined a plan to deal with that and urged that whoever won the election in 2016, he really laid out a roadmap for it. And I assume that that's the roadmap he'll use now.
Libby, what do you think?
Well, I think that this is a guy who knows what he's doing, and it's a breath of fresh air. I mean, when you look at other chiefs of staff over the last 4 years, and John Kelly, you know, was scathing over the weekend or at the end of last week about Trump. You know, it'll be nice to have, and not nice, but it'll be constructive and good for America to have somebody in that position that's not going to have to be constantly looking over their shoulder and wondering whether or not someone's going to come around the corner and say you're fired, or with a tweet, you're fired, which is how, you know, Trump does his deal. And so I think the fact that Klain has experience dealing with healthcare issues. He was the H1N1 czar when that hit during the Obama years. And yes, we lost people, 14,000 compared to almost a quarter of a million people now in the United States alone. I think we'll have somebody with the skills, the knowledge. I know we're going to have somebody with the skills and the knowledge and the ability to get things done. And the fact that he has been in the Senate and worked in the Senate, and he knows the players, you know, between him and Biden and perhaps Kamala Harris as well, although her tenure hasn't been as long in the Senate as Biden's was, we might be able to get some bipartisan cooperation going. I am holding up out hope that once Trump is gone, some of these tunes will begin to change.
Malcolm Nance.
Well, you know, it's at this point, we're going to have to discount the Trump administration. And I think Biden's doing the right thing, which is focusing on pandemic. And by putting Ron Klain in that job as, you know, former Ebola czar, he is showing that on day one, hour one, the United States is going to change. It's going to turn on a dime. The problem with this is maybe another 10 or 15 thousand Americans are going to die because Donald Trump refused to work with him. And that might be by Christmas. It's just absolutely disgraceful that the one thing that is really tearing through this nation, skyrocketing. I mean, if you saw the statistics over the last 2 weeks, We went from 8 million to 9 million, I believe, in 1 month. And then we went from 9 million to 10 million in 2 weeks. In another week, we may add on a million. This is the whole process of an infection burning through a society. And the Biden administration wants to jump in and do something about it. The Trump administration would rather Americans die rather than finally look this thing in the eye and admit that the nation is being massively killed off, but through an infectious disease that is not a liberal hoax.
Go ahead.
I think we can't let Vice President Mike Pence off the hook, not that anyone is, but the focus has been on Donald Trump. But listen, Mike Pence is he's the head of pandemic task force, right? He today could call for a joint task force meeting between the White House task force and the Biden task force, and let's add in the National Governors Association and the some House and Senate leaders. He could do that this week, and that would send a strong message. You know, he has the healthcare portfolio. He put all of his top people, Alex Azar, the Secretary of Health and Human Services, that's a Pence person, the Surgeon General, the Medicare, Medicaid person. He put his people, Pence people, all throughout the health portfolio because he wanted to control health care. This is on him, and he can do something about it.
We are just about out of time. We have to go to a break, but I will just leave this as food for fodder, and then we'll talk about it when we come back. But instead, what you say is absolutely true, but instead, the man who has emerged as one of the people who is the spokesman for the group is Dr. Scott Atlas, who, instead of dealing with this, has gone after the governor of Michigan once again, who has put some lockdowns in place and telling people to rise up. We'll take a break and be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to the panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Teresa Bourgeois, Malcolm Nance, and Libby Post. Right before the break, Alan, we were talking about the task force. And I also do want to mention, because I touched on it when I was talking about what the president said on Friday afternoon, but attacking Governor Cuomo and saying that because they want to review the vaccine that they will not be part of this, and was very pointed in his attacks on the governor. The governor, of course, has come out swinging, and now is saying that even lawsuits could be possible, and said that look. This distribution plan for the vaccine doesn't make sense, and it's relying on chain pharmacies, it's relying on private companies, and it puts lower income communities and communities of color at a disadvantage. So how does the governor, and I don't mean a political win, but how does he win here in the sense of getting what the state needs?
Well, first of all, he has to win by just staying put, because Joe Biden's going to be the president, we hope, despite the mouthings and insanity of Trump. So he knows that sooner or later it'll get to him, and he'll get to the new president, and the new president will see nothing like that. But you know, Joe, I am struck by what Cuomo is saying. We do know now, based on the figures that we have, that people of color, people of Hispanic descent, are getting the worst of this virus as it's out there. And we know that Cuomo was saying we have to figure out a distribution method which is not only for middle class or rich or white people, but for everybody. Look, I got a CVS. I understand it. Nevertheless, and I got my flu shot there. Nevertheless, Cuomo is right. This is not a good thing, and we really have to figure out a distribution process that's better.
Because they can be a part of the distribution process. That doesn't just have to be exclusively the distribution process.
Exactly.
Libby Post.
Well, I think that the governor's speech yesterday laid down where he is politically, clearly. I mean, we know where he is politically, that he has consistently talked about this issue, but brought it into focus in a way where you have a white man, and that's who Governor Cuomo is. He's a white male talking about the impact of COVID-19 and healthcare disparities and how we have to take a major step forward. And I agree with Alan. I mean, you know, Trump can like flail all he wants, but he can't make this decision about the vaccines because Biden will be making the decisions about the vaccines. Because while we might be on the cusp of a cure or a vaccine, it's going to be the Biden administration that implements the distribution of that vaccine. It's not going to happen in the next 60 plus days. It's going to take some time. So, I think that the governor is doing the right thing about putting this in focus and then moving it forward.
I understand that, but it's to the beginning of our conversation when we were talking about Ron Klain but we need to plan now, and if we're not getting the information and it is hindering the states in any way, that is a problem, right? I mean,
yes, but I think, you know, the fact of the matter is that, I mean, there's a part of me that is looking at all this and thinking about all the planning, and that the planning that the transition team is doing now, regardless of whether or not they get information from a bunch of people who don't want to cooperate and probably don't have a plan, what the transition team is putting together is going to be the plan. Because the higher-ups, Azar and the rest of them at HHS, they don't know what they're going to do. They don't have a plan. They don't really care. They only care about their own power. You know, Fauci, if there's a way to be able to communicate with him, and I'm sure they're finding some kind of back channel to do that, is the key to this and his people. And so, you know, I think what the plan's going to be is what comes out of the transition team.
And I think you see the members of the Biden task force on coronavirus. One of the co-chairs is Dr. Marcella Nunez Smith from Yale. And this, you know, health equity is her forte and addressing these very kinds of issues. And I do think that the more they speak out, the people within the administration, and it's the Defense Department has a key role in the distribution portion of this, and they will be hearing what's being said. I mean, it's essential that these teams start working directly together. But just by having these conversations made public, raising awareness, I think it's going to make a difference.
Malcolm?
You started off by talking about Dr. Scott Atlas, a radiologist?
Radiologist, yes.
Who is now leading Trump's quote-unquote coronavirus task force. He has also been an outspoken advocate of herd immunity, which we've talked about on this show many, many times, which would require 2-3% of the population that gets coronavirus to just let them die. I think it's dire that the incoming administration starts getting a handle on this right away, vaccine or no vaccine, because the current administration's philosophy, and I'm sure next year when we have the coronavirus criminal trials, it will find out that they had made a decision to just let people die and that coronavirus couldn't get in the way of their profits and, you know, running their businesses. That being said, the Governor Cuomo is absolutely right to threaten that he's going to take legal action against the Trump administration. But what good will that do, other than the fact that we don't know whether the vaccines will actually be ready to be distributed in time before there's another administration? So if I were the Cuomo administration, I would definitely start working with the Biden team to make sure that New York state healthcare is right up there with some of the other big parts of the country that really need immunization first. But I would just start ignoring the Trump administration. They wouldn't care one way or another if New Yorkers who voted for them or not died. That's very clear.
Well, I know. I mean, we have been hearing reports that that's exactly what they're doing, is that they are dealing. And the governor said that on Friday night when he was talking. He did a CNN double shot on both Wolf Blitzer and Anderson Cooper.
Joe, the Senate Republicans are going to be key on three portions of the pandemic response in the next couple of months. One is funding, and they need to pass a funding bill sooner rather than later, because they're going to need money to distribute these vaccinations. But the other two things are the FDA is going to need new leadership, as is the Center for Disease Control. And we're going to see how serious McConnell is if he slow walks those nominations. I mean, I think it'll be imperative that the Biden administration immediately name a new head of the FDA and the Centers for Disease Control, more important than, you know, previously. But those two positions and the head of HHS have to be confirmed immediately. And the question is, will McConnell slow walk those nominations or not?
Yeah.
It will be deadly if he does.
Alan?
No, Teresa's absolutely right. I've been thinking about this a great deal. That's why that election in Georgia counts for so much. Because if, in fact, and I think it's dubious that the Democrats will win there, but if, in fact, there were to, then the vice president would be in a position to, you know, call the shots and to vote with the confirmers. If McConnell, following along with a kind of obsequiousness that he has shown to this president, now thinks that the way to get ahead with his Republican constituents is to stop the confirmations from being done, it could be a total disaster and could cost a lot of lives.
And I don't, to what Malcolm said, though, Alan, and I agree with you, it doesn't seem like they care. I mean, right? They're just walking away.
They don't care. They don't care at all.
Yeah.
And I wish I were wrong on that. And I wish somebody could come and say, no, this is what they're doing that is good. I have trouble seeing it, especially. And I know this is just a visual, but, you know, you pick up the paper on Saturday morning and you see, we've hit the highest number that we've hit since the pandemic hit. It's the highest number not only in this country but in the world. And then you look over and there's the president playing golf. I don't know. It's hard to process.
You know, I think we've all been afraid, certainly, well, not on this program, but in other parts of the news media. And I've been chastised for that just last week when I was on the Bill Maher show. That 73 million Americans that voted for Trump, they don't care. They don't care whether people die. And what's the problem is that Republicans are the kind of people who will come out and say the obvious and shout it and scream it over and over. And what we're trying to do is be fair and believe that it's just a few bad apples in the Trump administration. They voted for 250,000 Americans to die. They voted for a health care policy which would strip 20 million Americans from their health care. They voted and think it's great that Donald Trump is playing golf as Americans die. The Democrats need to change their messaging to be hard next year. If McConnell won't put those people in office or bring them up for a vote, we need to say every death is on them. And, you know, and if they're not happening in blue states, they're happening in red states. And they seem to act like, you know, with their Trump, their MAGA rallies and everything without masks, that America is healthy and there's no problem out there. They live in an alternate universe. And part of that is this sort of death cult attitude of I don't care so long as it punks you liberals and makes you feel bad.
Well, on this International Day of Tolerance.
Oh, screw that. Come on.
You said it once. We're done.
No, go ahead, Teresa.
Now, I really think that what we have to understand is we need to bring more of those folks together with the opposite side of you. We need to figure out a way to bridge this divide. And it's very much a communications divide. And President Obama has been talking about this, others as well. We have to understand the problem with people getting two completely different sets of facts and try to deal with that, because it's tearing our country apart.
How would you do it?
The only way you're going to do that is to destroy Facebook. You really are. I mean, I'm monitoring these right-wing extremists and even just some moderate chat groups there, and they are being pummeled with extremist verbology. It's elimination.
And disinformation.
And complete... They live in an alternate universe where reality does not reflect anything that they see with their own eyes. The election to them has been stolen. We have to really stop thinking that, you know, we're going to do kumbaya for the first week and they're going to come along because we're going to talk about their economic plight. No, they don't believe in that. They think that all they have to do is attack you and then they'll be considered correct.
Yes, yes, yes. But I want to ask both Malcolm and Teresa the following question. You're right. And Obama is right that there is niche media appeal over certain Fox and whatever. So my question is, what do we do about that? You know, Malcolm says somewhat cavalierly. Yeah, cavalierly. Yeah, that's the one. you know,
bring in the cavalry.
Yeah, says you know, abolish Facebook, but we're not going to abolish Facebook. And we're not going to take away people's First Amendment rights to say what they want. So the question I have for you guys is, what do we do in order to put a stop to this?
You know, can I jump in real quick? I think the first thing we have to do is the Biden administration needs to lead, as they say, for all Americans. But stop thinking that you have to stop for a year to get their input on the next phase of Obamacare. I'm sorry, you are going to get hardcore Obama-like resistance from the Republican Senate if we don't take back the Senate. Nothing will get done. Being, you know, the master of the Senate, Lyndon Johnson era politicking for Joe Biden is not going to work. They are talking about eliminating this administration and just waiting to get Trump back in the office, and they mean it. So no one's going to take away their First Amendment, but we are going to have to run the country for the good of the country, you know, not listening to them, which will benefit them anyway. They don't care.
Well, but you're right. But you're right, Malcolm. But the question then becomes, because I think you may be taking a bifocal approach here. You know, in other words, it's one thing to fight with, and Teresa, it's one thing to fight with them about this kind of niche broadcasting that they're doing and what they're saying and 73 million Americans voting for them. And it's another to say, the hell with it. We just got to move forward and do what's right here. And that, I think, is what Biden, you know, is going to do. You know, I had a conversation recently with a guy who said it's disgraceful that you compared Trump to Hitler. And here's what, folks. Hitler killed a lot of people. No question. It's terrible, terrible, terrible. It's the worst thing, my people. On the other hand, you know, Trump is responsible for tens and tens and tens of thousands of deaths in this country because of his approaches to the coronavirus. There's a comparison, I'll tell you.
We do. I'm going to pause there.
Trump and Pence are responsible.
What'd you say? Trump and Pence are responsible, yeah.
Well, you can say Pence all day long, but Trump was the president and the buck stops with him.
I'm with you, Libby.
But we need levers to change the situation right now, and Pence is part of that lever.
Yeah, but he's not doing it.
He's not going to do a damn thing. He's not going to do anything because he wants to run for president, and he's not going to do anything that will make the Trump base angry. Nor does he want to do anything because, look, they knew and it's come out. Black and brown people were going to be adversely affected. They didn't care. It's less votes against them. Pence, if the entire LGBT community got COVID and died, he'd be dancing in the streets along with his evangelical Christian folks. So they don't care. He's not going to do one iota difference than he's already done.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We welcome you, panel at WAMC.org. We got a lot of letters, so we'll get to those. Alan Chartok, Teresa Bourgeois, Malcolm Nance, and Libby Post will be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartek, Teresa Bourgeois, Malcolm Nance, and Libby Post making up our group this morning. You know, we talk about all of this, and I will just enter this fact into the public record. Researchers estimate that almost every American knows someone who has been infected with the coronavirus, and that about a third of Americans know someone who has died. I bring that up because if that doesn't change your view, I don't know what will.
Well, don't you think having the president has the largest megaphone? And when the conversation from the White House, from the Oval Office changes, then hopefully we'll build some better understanding about how to collectively deal with this crisis.
Alan?
Oh, boy. It's a tough one. You know, I keep coming back to the fact that we have a president who doesn't give a damn. Teresa makes points. Oh, good point here. I agree with Libby that it is the president who is calling these shots, and we have, you know, he has a vice president who counts for nothing. He's no more than a jerk. So I don't know what else to say. I mean, where are we? We have a president who will not save American lives.
But I believe the public perception of the 72 million people who voted for Donald Trump and who may or may not have his philosophy about the severity of the virus. But if the majority of the people know someone who has had it, and if a third of the people know someone who has died from it, you think that alone would have an impact on how they think about it?
Well, yesterday, we had a meeting at Capitol Women, and one woman who was talking to a nurse in South Dakota said that the patients that are in the hospitals there are yelling at the healthcare workers, and they know they have COVID. They've been diagnosed with COVID, saying, "I don't have COVID. Don't treat me like I have COVID." Over and over and over again, screaming at the healthcare workers. And the only time they shut up is when they're intubated. I mean, you know, it's really something. People, despite the fact that they have this disease, they know people who have this disease, there are people, like taking the lead from the president, who are denying the reality of the situation, even if they have it and they see people around them sick and dying. It's like they're living in an alternative universe.
That's a good point. I mean, they're in many cases mirroring exactly what the president did when he had it. Yeah.
Right.
But we can change the national conversation. You see it happening already. The more and more that this Biden task force is out there talking, they're going to be meeting with the pharmaceutical executives. They'll be meeting with other business executives. Hopefully, they'll be, bringing together the National Governors Association and others, and you can change the national conversation. And that's what needs to happen.
And thank God, but we still have 60-some days to get through, right? And mm-hmm. the numbers mount every single solitary day. Malcolm, you were about to say, I'm sorry.
You can try to change the national conversation. That's well and good. We can try to lead the horse to water, but again, you can't make them drink. 73 million Americans in this country voted for a president who ran on the platform that COVID is a hoax. There was nothing worse than the flu. I'm seeing it every day, all day. Most of the country takes it seriously, but even people who have lost loved ones, people who have said that they don't believe in COVID and then have died, we see here the triumph of social media and propaganda over common sense. The very fact that you had 11,666 people come to the Million MAGA March in Washington, D.C., not wear masks, spitting and shouting, is a good example.
Let's see.
I guess we haven't since it's Monday. But did you talk about the crowd that besieged Hillary Clinton's house on Saturday in Chappaqua?
Mm.
Literally
no.
Down her front yard, screaming, no masks. Lock her up on Saturday night. These people are of a mindset, especially the most extreme of them, that their health is fine even as they're dying. They don't need health care even as they can't afford to take care of their families. Again, this is the triumph of Trump's propaganda. It's not going away. These people will not come along with you, whether you want them to or not.
Malcolm, you've been at this a long time. How do you combat propaganda? Because it is propaganda. But how do you successfully combat propaganda?
Well, you know, propaganda can be countered by just one, shutting off the flow of it. But that's not what we're, to a certain extent. I should have said we're not dealing with the triumph of propaganda so much as the fact that propaganda has led many of these followers into a form of cultism. You know, I've written several books on how Al-Qaeda and ISIS were essentially political religious cults. And cultism requires you to inject a what we call the weapon of doubt into the mindset of the true believer. But it's also the mindset of the true believer to not believe anything that doesn't come from their cult leader. The Japanese terrorist group Aum Shinrikyo, which carried out nerve gas attacks inside subways and, you know, literally tried to harvest Ebola to wipe out the population of Japan. They still have true believers in prison to this day. So it's going to be very, very difficult. But these people sustain themselves in their, you know, I monitor Gab and Parler and all WeMe and all these new right-wing social media sites that remove them from Twitter and Facebook. And it's dangerous out there. They're just not going to come along.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have a lot of letters, so I want to get to those. And we have them for almost every member of the panel, so we'll go through those right now. Panel at WAMC.org, and we will return right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Teresa Bourgeois, Malcolm Nance, and Libby Post on this morning. We have a lot of letters, so I want to get to those, and then we'll move on to other topics. Let's go to Donna and says, Hans Christian Andersen wrote in 1837, "Meanwhile, the emperor continues the procession, walking more proudly than ever. When will the Trump administration and enablers acknowledge that the emperor is not wearing any clothes?" Well, we've been asking this question for a long time, have we not?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Never.
This one's for
I'm
you.
I'm never going to admit it.
Malcolm, this one's for you. Mike says, help me understand what we have to look forward to. Republicans almost took the House and will be poised to do so in the midterm elections. In 2024, I can't see how a Democrat wins the White House. Tell me something good.
Well, first off, I can see why a Democrat could win the White House. I mean, we had the largest mobilization of Democratic voters in American history, of voters in American history. It's just that some of those races were extremely competitive, and some of them, I have to tell you, I'm on board that the whole defund the police movement really hurt.
Right.
I know people in South Carolina, my family's from South Carolina. You know, we didn't think Jamie Harrison was going to win, but you know, I didn't think he would lose by the margin that he did. You know, this is a damaging thing. People think on a very small scale. When you say defund the police, that mobilizes people to come out that wouldn't have. All we can do right now is consolidate what we have. And really, this is part of the problem with the Democratic Party. They stop doing work until the election period comes up. We need to be all hands on deck for the next 2 years, because the Republicans and the conservatives, the Trump conservatives, are going to be out for blood for the next 2 years. They're going to destroy everything Joe Biden wants to do, and they are just going to be pushing every effort to 2022, and we should also.
Libby, you work on campaigns. What do you think?
Well, I think that if they put Stacey Abrams in charge of the Democratic National Committee, which is my hope, and not Jamie Harrison, which is I've seen floated, the Democratic Party will be revolutionized in a way that it hasn't been in a very, very long time. And we will see the ability to really reach communities of color across the country, as well as low-income folks, and get them engaged in the process. I don't think that, I think when all the votes are counted, Biden will win maybe 7 to 10 million will be his edge when everything is all said and done. And so I do think that the Democrats have the edge. What we need to do is clamp down on this virus and rebuild the economy, which is something that the Democrats have always done. You know, my partner Lynn keeps saying, why isn't somebody talking about the fact that it's the deficits that get run up during the GOP that the Democrats historically have taken care of? And we have seen that time and time again. It was Obama and Biden who cured our economic woes after the Bush 8 years, and Biden will do the same. We will be able to get our economy back in running order. And what's also very interesting is that the surviving Koch brother over the weekend said they made a big mistake in doing the kind of politics that they did, and hopefully he can bring some of these other conservative money bags with them to recognize that Trump was the worst thing that could have ever happened to this country, and that people need to start working together. But the Democrats shouldn't take anything lying down and have to fight back with both guns.
Alan?
I want to piggyback on something that I think Malcolm said, and I think makes a great deal of sense. If you take a look at Trump and his rallies, you say, okay, well, what was this guy really doing? He was running an all-year election. Mm. That's what he was doing. Every time he went and had a rally, it was what one would do usually during an election season. But no, from day one, he decided, and I've often wondered why the Democrats didn't do this, he started having rallies, which were basically political rallies for his reelection. The Democrats have to take a lesson from that, I think.
We go, let's see. Ann says, my sister has a slight cognitive disability and lives alone. She has joined a secret society called NeoThink and belongs to a Pentecostal church. It's easy to deny the coronavirus when you can believe that it's God's will and that herd immunity works and that the raptures are coming. This is what she's being told. That and that the virus was man-made in China and caused, of course, by people at the top who want to hurt us. And that makes and that masks don't help and that doctors have said only healthcare providers need to wear them. There's no point in arguing with her, not with any of these people, and I don't know what the answer is. She's been brainwashed into only believing what the society and her church tells her and to disbelieve everything else. It's beyond heartbreaking. I can't visit her as it would be too risky given what she believes. I fear for her safety. I fear for us all. It makes me feel better to listen to you sane people. I know that someone out there cares about our country. Well, Ann,
Libby,
thank you for that.
Libby, didn't they say the same thing? Didn't they say the same thing about AIDS? In other words, in other words, this was God's will for all the sinning people, and you know, that's what happened.
And they're still saying it to some degree. I mean, there's no two ways about it. But you know, I mean, we have to look historically, and the way to overcome this, and it's not, this is a long term, not a tomorrow solution, is education and teaching people civics and strengthening our public schools and showing people that critical thinking is a good thing to do. Because these folks, like this woman's sister, they only want to be told what to think. They don't really want to think. They want to be told what to think. Look what happened in Nazi Germany. It was the same thing. Blind following of a dictator and atrocities followed. And the same thing happened here. The good thing is that the roots of our democracy, the strength of our democracy, overpowered the will to have a dictator in the United States. And Biden won, and we will strengthen our democracy over the next 4 years. But we also need to show how education is going to be key to this. And having a first lady who is an educator and will, you know, walking Betsy DeVos out the door and totally reversing all of her horrible decisions around public education in this country is a first step. But the Republicans have been doing this for decades, and we haven't. Mm-hmm. And we really have to start working on education.
One of the things that I think we need to take from the playbook of the last 4 years, and Democrats are terrible at this,
We need to take credit for the things that we do. I mean, we're constantly. I mean, when Donald Trump signed the the checks that went out, well, that set a precedent. There's no reason why Joe Biden, when the next $1 trillion goes out, shouldn't be able to sign off on these checks. But I've already seen on some of these extremist forums that the Trump cure of the vaccine, which we find that Pfizer took no money from this administration to develop, they are going to proclaim that Trump cured coronavirus and that Biden is killing Americans. I mean, they live in a topsy-turvy world. We should come out and say, yes, we did this. Yes, we got you health care. Yes, we expanded Social Security. Yes, we're saving Medicare. And say it over and over again.
And I think in one of his interviews, former President Obama spoke about the fact that they did not do enough of that, he realizes in retrospect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And one of the reasons I was so delighted about Ron Klain getting the job he has is because he understands the power and importance of messaging. And that's what we need to change the national conversation. And we need to have those people who feel isolated and are finding community within these other, groups, we need to give them a different place to be and a different place to come to and a different place to feel a sense of community. And I think that, people are isolated. They need a different, a safer place to have a sense of community.
We have a bunch
Can I make one more comment?
Yeah, sure.
One easy thing that they can do, and if they call me, I'll be sure to tell them, is they have to be patriotic about what's about to happen with this new administration. They need to say, we as America are now coming together, and we're going to end this thing. We're going to break the back of this virus in the next 90 to 120 days. Do your patriotic duty. Start putting advertisements out on television the way they used to, PSAs. About how patriotic it is to wear your mask, how it saves the health of the nation, how we're not going to be weak. There's only 70 years of Cold War experience in this, right? Mm-hmm. They should learn how to use those systems.
Absolutely.
All right. We have a lot of letters. Let me get to as many as we can here in the time that we have before break. If I will read through them, and if the panel, any panelist wants to stop and comment, please do so. We go to Deb, who says, some of these people that are struggling to believe that COVID is real really do not know anyone that has had it. I live in the Berkshires and don't know anyone who's had it. My family in Schenectady, they don't know anyone who's had it. And relatives in Florida, Philadelphia, and Kentucky, none of them know anyone who's had it. Luckily, no one in my family denies the existence of the disease, but I can't understand people struggling to believe it exists if not impacted at all. Umbarak says, people do have COVID fatigue. They know people who have died, but overwhelmingly those people have underlying conditions. The guy I knew who died was 90 years old. It is terrible, but it robbed him of such a short period of time. Almost everybody I know who has had it, had no symptoms. The economics of the pandemic affects so many more people, and many falsely blame the Democrats for the economic harms, that we just want to shut down the economy. Democrats need to refocus and talk about the horrible effects to the healthcare system as well as our healthcare providers. Linda writes, Trump said that he should he shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue, he could get away with it. Well, now he's killed over 250,000 people and is getting away with it. He's a vindictive person. I think he knew he would not win the election, hence his lies about voting fraud. This may be far-fetched, but what if he is intentionally allowing people to die by encouraging people to not wear the mask? His personal revenge on the nation, some sick satisfaction. I know it's a far-fetched thought, but with this guy, any horrible thing is possible. He should be tried for crimes against humanity and treason. Alan, there's a lot of people who feel that way.
Well, to say that he is personally responsible for 250,000 may be a little bit of a stretch, but not much. The fact of the matter is we would have saved tens and tens and tens of thousands of lives. We know it from Dr. Fauci and everybody else, had we told everybody to wear a mask. Now, the letter writer is interesting and says this may be Trump's attempt at revenge. Revenge from what? He's been doing it all along. Forget about it just because he lost the election. So I don't fully get that unless we're talking psychiatric and we're talking what his sister and his niece said right. about him. That's another whole story.
John writes, go ahead.
I think it's more of a lack of understanding or care about how to govern and the mechanics of what you can do. And then you have people in place like the Health, Secretary of Health and Human Services, Alex Azar, and others who just don't have the same focus. But hopefully we're turning the corner on that one.
I think the writer is probably correct. I've said this on air several times. I suspect at some point next year we're going to find the documents where they all quietly agreed to go to herd immunity. It happened. All the behavior started changing in late June, early July, when the second explosion happened. They stopped distributing materials, and I wouldn't be surprised if we actually find documentation where they decided to allow New York State to die and deliberately withheld in materials. Yeah, I mean, you can quote me when it happens. But they're going to be working furiously to get rid of that information. But nothing disappears from government computers forever. And, you know, there's just no explaining it otherwise. It's not just incompetence. Why are they all today essentially ignoring the virus and allowing, telling them to open up states and things like that and talking about punishing New York State? Because it has to be an operational philosophy of the administration.
You will all remember, whether you're not, that famous meeting when the Nazis finally got together and decided at this meeting that the final solution was going to be to kill all the Jews.
The Wannsee Conference.
That's
right. And we're
going
to have Wannsee documents someday.
And so that's a good point, Malcolm. That's all I want to say.
All right, back to the letters we go. John says, perhaps there should be discussion of the fact that we're being ruled by the minority. All right. Nick says, Malcolm didn't answer Teresa's question. What do you do to combat the propaganda? I assume because it's a tough answer. Neither do I, of course, have an answer. Depressing. ..
Well, you got to get out there and do it. Right. You got to get out there and do it. You can't just let them have their say. You know, they're all beginning to write me letters now and count on Trump winning back his presidency in 2024. And, you know, if everybody in Mrs. Wick's terms says, stay shut, you know, shut your mouth, Shartok, stay shut. Well, we know what's going to happen. They'll win. You know, the point is it has to be assiduously addressed and Biden's got to be tough. Now, I'm not going to tell Biden what to do in life because he won and I was for him and I thought his moderation was going to help him. But I do think at some point when these thugs continue to do their thuggery, he's going to have to come out swinging.
But we can't keep giving Trump oxygen, though. And his oxygen
Trump's
going to
take oxygen. Right. He's going to take it. He's not going away. He is running a political insurgency, and he will be just as loud every day as he has been before, except where he will be unchained from the presidency.
I agree. I mean, I think what he's trying to do now in this extended period is raise money, and we all know that the money's not going to the Georgia campaign or the defense fund. The money goes to him and to the RNC, and, you know, by all accounts, he wants to take over some media entity and continue what he's doing. But I don't know. I think we have to have a very strong communications campaign.
I don't agree with you. I think what he's trying to do is reverse an election. I really do.
Oh, I think he's just trying to sow doubt over time so he can, for the next couple of years, say it was stolen. And
yeah, and, you may be right.
He's trying to
you
raise
may be
a lot
right.
Of, he's just trying to raise a lot of money. That's what he's
this
doing.
This is a guy, Teresa, who may end up going to jail if he kicked out of the presidency. And I think he's doing everything in his power to make sure that he is not. He's got 72 million people at his disposal to make his case. No, I don't agree with you. I think he means what he says. His relatives always say he means what he says. What he says is, I won this election. And he's very reminiscent of other dictators who did the same thing.
You know, I'm writing a book on this about a coming Trump insurgency. And the first phase of insurgency is to delegitimize the standing government and overturn elections either through political action or through paramilitary action. I don't think it's going to get paramilitary right away, but I do think that Donald Trump and the Rump Republican Party will become a ruthless, virulent, Alex Jones-level crazy opposition, and that they will defy the Democrats on everything. Dog catcher? No dog catchers. I mean, Trump will be leading this like Saddam Hussein out of power.
I do agree he's trying to delegitimize or attempting to, you know, sow doubt about the election so that he can retain his base and do it in some other form out of office. But I also think he's just trying to raise a lot of money.
Well, we disagree. We disagree.
I mean, he is raising money, right?
Correct.
I mean, right? I mean, he is raising money, and it is going to, and it isn't going to the recount.
The Georgia Fund.
It's going into right
or the recount, yeah.
Yeah, Mar-a-Lago's not going to repair itself.
John writes, you cannot change the national conversation while Rupert Murdoch decides what news half the country consumes. We need to restore the fairness doctrine. Will writes, when you talk about niche messaging, you're talking about 90% right-wing radio, about 200 Sinclair stations, Fox News dominance in the ratings, Newsmax, OAN, and now Mercer's Parlor, et cetera, et cetera. In 1987, the Republicans got rid of the Fairness Doctrine. That was the beginning of raw sewage pouring into our discourse. The Republicans coordinated and weaponized language in the 90s. Murdoch et al. Is destroying our country. That from Will. Anna says, why are you not talking about our local Republican supporters, the CEOs, the dog catchers, the bankers who are the ones who are killing us? Forget about Trump. Talk about your local GOPers who support him, our neighbors and even friends who are killing us. Get local. That's where the support is.
It's not either or. You can obviously do both. I mean,
local activism. But the local activism is so key. It's what we see. You know, I mean, I think we all took the blue wave for granted, and look what happened in Congress. I mean, we didn't lose it, but those local folks, they got their people out. Local grassroots activism is going to be key as we go into 2022 and then 2024.
And we also have to deal with redistricting now, too, with primarily too many Republican-controlled states.
Susan writes, if Mitch won't confirm, can Biden appoint people in an acting capacity?
No. Well, you have what's
yes.
the problem. You can, but you're going to run into the same problem that, you know, you had this DACA ruling, and I'm blanking on the guy's name, but he is in an acting and changed the rules, and the court ruled that it wasn't legitimate because
Chad Wolf.
Thank you very much.
All right.
He's at the door.
Let's see. We go to this letter from Lori, who says, thanks to Libby and Teresa for talking about the positive side of the Biden team planning ahead. In this time of my chest tightening, you help with fostering a bit of calm. For Malcolm, remember when Trump mused about having to leave the country if he lost to Biden? On Bill Maher's show, you indicate that this is not the recent trend for fallen dictators. Since you said it, though, he must be thinking about it. Is it more possible in Trump's case? He has a lot of debt and litigation to avoid. Thanks for your thoughts.
I think, I can't recall who said it. Might have been Jennifer Rubin yesterday in the Washington Post, who said that Trump will just quietly stop coming to Washington probably by mid-December and will be in Mar-a-Lago. And just you'll just notice he's not in Washington for the inauguration. I think he'll self-isolate. I think or self-exile, but to Florida, which now, since Florida went red, he views as a friendly territory. But I wish. I mean, you know, I would let him go to Moldova.
We got to take
with whatever he's got.
We got to take a break. Final go-round for our panel segment this morning, and just about 15 minutes to wrap up. We still have some letters I want to get to. Terry writes, I don't believe Trump is afraid he's going to prison. He's never had any consequences for his behavior before, and I'm sure he doesn't think he will have any more now. Molly says, Teresa's right. We have to find a way to bridge the gap between the denizens of reality and those who inhabit Trump's world. But Malcolm's also right. While we're trying to build that bridge, hundreds of thousands, maybe millions, will die. COVID-19 has been called a national security threat. Isn't there some way the Biden administration, once it gets in, can use that as a way to further their sane agenda? Sane,
yes.
S-A-N-E.
Yes, there is. As a matter of fact, Biden can do and has already proposed that he's going to do on day one what Donald Trump didn't do, and that is to harness the full power of the United States government from all aspects. That's the Defense Department, the Commerce Department, the Labor Department. They're going to mobilize national assets, not just for getting masks. Did you know that the post office offered to mail a mask to every American last March? And the Trump administration kiboshed it. Well, that can happen. We'll start making our own PPE and create a national infrastructure for distributing the vaccine. You will see action that we should have seen last February.
Rosemary writes, every person I know that voted for Trump said Democrats are socialists. They will defund the police and will have crime in the streets. The message stuck. Only during the debate did I hear Joe Biden say, I'm not a socialist. It should be said over and over. That's why Congress gained Republican seats. But we should know Biden also won, right, Alan?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we've already said that. You know, I mean, we've already said that. You know, this business about defunding the police was just dumb. You know, you're running a campaign. People want to be protected. They want police. You can say reform the police and it would have had some good residents. Instead, they say defund the police. Even Murray is angry about this. You can hear him in the background. It was just dumb because of the way that it was done. And sometimes I worry about some of those among us who just can't smell the flowers and figure this out.
Tom writes, the Trump presidency and the COVID pandemic are two lightning flashes that have illuminated aspects of ourselves as individuals and as a nation that we don't usually see. Some of what we see is ugly, but it's good to know it's there. Now we need leaders to inspire us to be our best selves. We also need to rework our public school curricula to include moral and civic responsibility. Suzanne writes, we've known for months that there would be mail-in ballots to be counted after Election Day. The protesters in Washington over the weekend forgot or never heard that and insisted that votes had been quote-unquote found. Most Republicans are not that misinformed and accept the results. Will the diehards ever get it? I think so, eventually. All right.
Well, you know, if all those ballots are bad, then everybody else who got elected off of those ballots are also in trouble.
You mean the Republican House members?
Yes, like the Republican Senate and House members. I mean, you know, you can't have it both ways. And really, and this has been on a meme that's going around, which is so true. If we had managed to manipulate the election to that point, McConnell would not be reelected, and this Democrats would be in firm control of the Senate. So give me a break.
Carolyn writes, has Elise Stefanik responded to Trump's threat about not giving New Yorkers the vaccine? She has, actually. She has.
Really? What'd you say?
She is condemning Governor Cuomo's stance on the vaccines. We are appalled by Governor Cuomo's continued insistence on undermining a COVID-19 vaccine, the integrity of the FDA, and the hundreds of incredible scientists who have dedicated their lives to serving the American people. Numerous public health experts have noted that the governor's office are not only wrong and unethical, they are fundamentally dangerous, and they put people's lives in jeopardy. That was the response.
So what do you expect in a country where political survival becomes paramount, where the Republican senators say, I'm not going to give up my office, even if it means dictatorship? I mean, it's just so sickening. It makes me want to vomit.
Barbara says the first people to get the vaccine should be all the frontline workers who have kept this country running, those who have taken care of our health and teaching our children, getting us food and mail, etc. Peg says, does Trump have the ability to withhold the vaccine from New York?
Probably not.
No. He won't when it's time for it to be distributed. He'll be gone by then.
It's just a way to open his yap and get more people angry at him, which is his way of dealing with life. That's what he does.
Control the news cycle.
Gene says, I want to get Malcolm's thoughts about dealing with the cult that he says won't go away. He has so much experience in these areas. Is there any solution or effort with all those folks, or is it hopeless?
No, I don't think it's hopeless. And, you know, at some point, maybe you should do a show with Steve Hassan, the anti-cult or the cult deprogrammer from Boston. There are ways to do it. They're very slow, and the deprogramming takes a lot of effort. But the problem is that so long as that information bubble of Fox News, Newsbusters, OANN, all these other sources that feed their unreality to them, it's very hard to be weaned off of it.
And you fix that how?
You know what? Barack Obama mentioned this yesterday in his 60 Minutes interview. You're never going to get rid of Facebook, but Facebook can certainly be regulated like the broadcast organization that it is. It's been it's been essentially let go to do whatever it wants. And I think it's time for us to take a hard look at that organization.
And Fox?
Fox, well, you know, it's up to legislators. They could always reestablish the fairness doctrine.
Well, Trump is going to go after Fox if he gets his way and starts
see Fox pulling away from him, and he wants to. Trump wants to create his own entity, and you see that fissure happening right now. But I think, Malcolm, there's a difference between some of Trump's core, real, hard base. And, you know, the other people who voted for him. And it's that outer ring of people, the other people who voted for him, who we really need to reach out to and try to pull in to be part of this national effort on the coronavirus and other things.
I said this on Bill Maher last week. I'll repeat it again. They voted for him. They voted for everything he stood for. Therefore, there's no difference between the guys in the trucks and the people that went into the voting booth.
This story, Malcolm, I want to get your thoughts. We're running out of time, but last week, as the White House digested news of a defeat at the polls, Trump administration officials were greeted with the reports of troubling setbacks on two fronts in the country's long simmering conflict with Iran. First came a leaked UN document showing yet another sharp rise in Iran's stockpile of enriched uranium. Then satellites tracked an Iranian oil tanker, the fourth in recent weeks, sailing toward the Persian Gulf after delivering Iranian petroleum products to Venezuela. The first item was further proof of Iran's progress in amassing the fuel used to make nuclear energy and potentially nuclear bombs. The second revealed gaping holes in President Trump's strategy for stopping that advance. Over the summer, the administration made a show of seizing cargo from several other tankers at sea in a bid to deter Iran from selling its oil abroad. Yet Iran's oil trade, like its nuclear fuel output, is on the rise again. So the Trump administration's maximum pressure policy is hitting a wall. What does this mean, and what do we do about it?
Well, number one, it's an absolute abject failure. It's been a failure since day one. When he pulled out of the Iran nuclear deal, he gave Iran permission to go out and enrich as much nuclear weapons-grade uranium as they wanted to. That was the deal, was to stop them. We had taken away 98% of their enrichable uranium. Iran's now has no holdbacks to do that. With regards to seizing oil, you can go and call embargoes all you want. But Iran is now doing military exercises with Russia and China. China's buying every drop of it. Anything that goes to Venezuela is a bleed over. I've lived in the Gulf states for 10 years. I've served in there for over 20 years. When it comes to illegally trading oil, everyone comes up to you on the street and says, I have 500 barrels. Do you know where I can offload it? They really do have a very huge black market oil supply that will never staunch. And hopefully the Biden administration can talk Iran down and the Gulf states back from, you know, these places that Trump took them to. But, you know, it's all about weapons sales over there, and all sides are trying to get their money.
So, Malcolm, do they have a bomb?
No, they don't have a bomb. And the day that, that Donald Trump became president, Iran was 15 years from developing an atomic bomb. By coming out of that deal, we essentially, their breakout was 9 months, the point where they could achieve a bomb when we put the Iran deal in order. Who knows what level they're at right now, maybe 10 years, 8 years. But as long as they're unchecked and they don't have a deal and are under sanctions, they're going to build the bomb.
Malcolm, what do you make of these weapon sales to the Saudis?
Well, Donald Trump has proven, you know, I mean, Trump has proven that an American president can be bought through weapons sales. Many of these sales, Trump positioned as us, we need to make money or the Russians are going to make money. Well, everyone's making money over there. But the more worrying issue that I have is not so much them buying weapons. We always sell weapons in that part of the world. The worrying part is how Trump essentially gave Palestine to the Israelis, and then the Arab states, the Gulf states, said, yeah, go ahead and take it. Who knows what that's going to turn into in another 5 or 10 years, possibly the largest war in the Middle East.
Libby, anything on this?
Nope.
Okay. do you want to talk about Kamala Harris? There's the two big articles about Kamala Harris this weekend. One is, where is she? People are wondering why she has not been more front and center in as this transition over the last week. I don't know what they want, but that is one of the things that came out. Article in the Washington Post, Harris's allies wonder anxiously, will she have real clout? While activists remain excited about Harris's ascent, many now worry that the administration will not deliver much beyond their historic election, a fear sharpened by Democrats' disappointing performance in congressional races, which has dramatically limited Biden's maneuvering room.
Well, let's just try and create some news, and that's all these stories are. You know, Harris, Joe Biden was a strong vice president to Obama, and I think that he will do the same and put Harris in the same kind of position. He knows he has to have her out front. He knows that it was black and brown people who helped him get elected, and he has to show his commitment to that community, and that's through giving her real things to do, and I think he will. Why wouldn't he? She's a smart, capable woman, and it's important. And I think these stories are, well, we don't want to write about Trump anymore, and we don't want to write about, you know, it's getting boring, so let's find some new controversy.
But why don't they write about how the leadership role she had on the healthcare issue last week, and today he's giving an economic speech, and so is she. And, you know, she's been at his side, or she's been doing speeches on her own. And look at the landing teams that they've created, the key leadership transition teams, the incredible diversity. I think it's more than half are women, and incredible diversity on, and you know, expertise on these transition teams and the COVID virus task force, incredibly diverse. One of the co-chairs is an African-American woman, a tremendous expert in healthcare. I mean, I just think he's speaking by his actions, and she's right there speaking as well.
Libby, I can give you the last word if you can do it in 5 seconds.
Sure. One of the articles said that Biden's going to control her staff picks, and that's simply not true. Her chief of staff is a black lesbian who has incredible credentials.
All right. We'll end there. My thanks to everybody. A great conversation this morning. Alan, thank you very much.
Thanks, Joe.
Teresa Bourgeois, Malcolm Nance, Libby Post, all great to have you all aboard. Thank you. We'll be back with the Congressional Corner next.